Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
He kōna e purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
G'day and welcome to Country Life. I'm Duncan Smith.
Kia ora, great to have your company. Ko Sally Round Dene. Today we're with some farmers who've been taking a break, spinning their wheels on mountain bikes. They're part of a group called Rural Riders, based on surfing for farmers and helping rural people take a breather from their jobs and socialise.
Later, we hear from researchers and interested locals at the Food, Farming and Freshwater Roadshow in Marlborough. But first, let's meet our guest this week, who came into dairy farming through a bit of an unusual route. Eric Fa'anoi grew up in Porirua and went on to work in the environmental area, helping farmers plant up their waterways and protect native fish. Until fairly recently, he was an advisor and researcher with Horizons Regional Council. And now, you can find him in the pit of a herringbone dairy shed, milking twice a day, working for contract milker Matthew O'Connell in Taranaki. Sally caught up with him at afternoon milking time.
So we're just waiting now for the cows to move on out, and then what, another load will come in, will they?
Yep. So they're all waiting sort of out in the yard, and Amy will shut the gate when the last one gets to the front, and then we can go on.
And my name's Eric Fa'anoi. Grew up down in Porirua, went to uni at Massey University, where I met Matt. Worked at the regional council down in the Manawatū for 3 years after uni, and then was looking for a change and ended up farming. Okay, we're in the pit now of the dairy, and Amy's just hosing out, so we'll start cupping on the left side.
We're in amongst it, and I'm standing clear.
Our farm is located about 10 minutes south of Opunaki, towards the mountain a little bit. We are a 97 effective hectare farm, 330 cows when we're milking in the peak of the season.
Those cows will be milked and then we swap them over as the cows come in, so it's pretty much just back and forth the whole time.
Another milking over.
Yeah.
Do you like the routine of it?
I do. Yes, I do.
You're pretty fresh to this. You started in October.
Yes.
And you come from this job in the environmental area.
Yes.
Helping farmers with their riparian planting.
Yep.
And protecting native fish.
Yep. Yeah, no, it's definitely not a conventional role change and career change, but I initially just loved farming anyway from when I was a young fella, and so I guess for me it's always been about farming. Even the environmental studies and all of that sort of stuff, I sort of went into it with the mindset that somehow I was going to end up working in the industry and helping them somehow to be able to farm into the future. So yeah, that's still the goal.
So let's talk a little bit about the role you had before, and mm-hmm. and what are you finding in terms of transferable skills?
My other role, I worked alongside a lot of really good farmers down in the Manawatū. As opposed to us going out there and looking for farmers, it was the other way around. Like, the farmers that were keen for us to come onto their property and help them with their riparian planting would call us. And so, in general, the attitude towards us and the attitude towards the whole, you know, fencing off waterways and ecological restoration was really, like, positive, and it was really surprising to see how much drive that a lot of them did have for it.
Here at Skeet Road, where mm-hmm. the dairy farm is,
yep.
are you doing any sort of work in that
space?
Yeah,
like a lot of the streams on the farm here at Dairyname are already all planted up, and in Taranaki as a whole, you notice the difference as soon as you cross that that boundary between Manawatu and all the Horizons region and the Taranaki region, you can see all the riparian planting that's gone on. But yeah, here on Dunedin, I think he's been planting ever since they've been here, so almost about 20 years worth of riparian planting, and I believe they've finished a lot of it anyway, so it'll just be infilling and all that sort of stuff that would go on.
And do they call on you for some of your knowledge?
Well, they haven't yet, but I'm assuming that when that time comes, then absolutely they would, yeah. And I've already sort of stuck my nose into some of the environmental plan work they've done on here, and I enjoy doing the irrigator and being in charge of the effluent and where that ends up on the paddock and all that sort of stuff. No matter where you are and what farm you're working on, there's always going to be the argument where you can do more. But, you know, at the moment when times are relatively trying, you know, people don't really want to be investing a hell of a lot into anything other than trying to get the day-to-days and trying to get by. So just doing what we can, which we are doing.
Yeah, and I suppose conversely, farmers talk about a lot of over-regulation mm-hmm. and being under the pump there.
Yeah.
Do you, now that you're working on a dairy farm, do you see that?
Again, it's hard for me to say because I'm just so like fresh into it, and I haven't really personally felt the pressure yet. But that's because I'm just doing the day-to-days and still learning a whole hell of a lot as well. And I don't have those big decisions that I need to make put on me yet. I can definitely see it the next few years being trying for farmers. And I said it when I was working at the council as well, that it's not easy to change years of the way that things have been happening and all that sort of stuff. So it's I understand the pushback and all of that sort of stuff that goes on.
You said you have an interest in future-proofing farming.
Yes, yep.
Tell us a little bit more about that and what you're thinking there.
I guess for me, like, there's lots of people that would tell you that there's no way for it to continue how it's been happening the last X amount of years, which I kind of agree with a little bit. But then also I think that, you know, with all the new technology that's coming out these days, that there's only going to be room for improvement on farming practices. And I can, you know, one day I'd love to be able to farm my own piece of land. So I guess that's where that sort of mentality comes from, is like, I'd love for my kids, or whenever that happens, to grow up on a farm and have that experience as well. So,
and you yourself, you didn't grow up on a farm.
No.
You're from Porirua originally.
Yes.
And you have Samoan heritage.
Yes.
Now, that was a big moment for you, heading back to the village and seeing the involvement in agriculture there.
Yeah, yeah. So when I was finishing up at Horizons, I took some time off. Something was telling me to just go back to Samoa, so I decided to listen to it and ended up getting a plane ticket and heading back there with one of my aunties for about 3 weeks in September. And it was a real good experience to see a lot of the people that I hadn't seen in 18 years and reconnect with some of the family, and then also to get out on the land and do some of the hard yards as well, which was good. A lot of my uncles and stuff back there will have their own plantations still, and still planting taro and growing taro and selling that, and fruit and coconuts and whatever else that they could grow. It just confirmed, I guess, why I've just got this inclination to be out on the land, I think. And hearing stories about my granddad and how they, you know, were really well looked up to horticulturists, and they, yeah, had competitions with other villagers and growing stuff, and it's cool to see. And I think there's a lot of potential there for some of those younger ones coming through to potentially get into agriculture in New Zealand, and yeah, it'd be cool to see that happen.
Eric Fa'anoi, outside the dairy shed where he works in Taranaki. He recently won Taranaki Dairy Trainee of the Year, part of the New Zealand Dairy Awards competition.
Let's take a look at the headlines from RNZ's Rural News Desk this week with reporter Sally Murphy. And Sally, we've been talking a lot about drought these last few weeks, and this week the rain has poured down. Has it been in the areas which really need it?
It has. The heavy rain that's been lashing the west coast most of this week has actually moved to the top of the South Island overnight. We did a bit of a ring around Marlborough this morning to farmers, and they're actually pretty happy to see the rain, as it's been months since any decent downpours. And fortunately, the heavy rain isn't causing too many issues there. It's kind of been the same on the west coast. Huge rainfall has fallen there this week, but not too many issues reported at this stage.
And this week you've reported on a record profit for Westland Milk.
Yes, it's netted a profit of $55.9 million. That's due to strong sales of its butter. The company's now on the lookout for new farmer suppliers to help meet growing demand for its dairy products. Here's Westland Chief Executive Richard Waith.
It's been a big part of it. Like any strategy, you have to have good capital programs, and we basically doubled the size of our butter plant, and then really that came to fruition in 2023. So that and really opened up the US market for us by doubling our padded butter, which is our consumer butter production. So that enabled us to, as I say, drive into the US and deliver strong outcomes as a result.
Now, some news this week about new uses for strong wool.
Yes, this is the coarser type of wool used in carpets and upholstery. The market has been down in the dumps, so innovation has been key here in getting better returns for farmers. A company based in Christchurch, Woolsource, has made some technological breakthroughs, allowing strong wool to be made into powders and pigments. It's already making lipstick with the Karen Murrell brand, using pigment from wool keratin. We put in a call to Woolsource's chief executive, Tom Hooper, to find out more.
All of the carriers that carry colour globally pretty much are petrochemical compounds, and they don't break down. Because of the way we do it and the fact that we use wool as our particle base, we have 100% bio content and we're 100% biodegradable. And yes, it means we're now competitive in those fields. When it all came together, yeah, it was a good day.
Tom Hooper told us they want to build a production factory in the near future, which could be scaled up with the support of their large clients. He's pretty excited to have a project that could use up to 20% of New Zealand's strong wool clip.
Wow, that's amazing. The government's taking another look at freshwater farm plans, Sally.
It is. It's reviewing the current system, which it says is too costly, complex and too broadly applied. Freshwater farm plans were introduced back in 2019 for basically every farm that has over 20 hectares in pastoral use to help improve environmental outcomes. Some regions have already begun rolling out the plans, but Associate Minister for the Environment, Andrew Hoggard, says the government isn't happy with them.
The one thing I've found talking to numerous groups sort of coming into the role was, whichever group I talked to, it seemed to be a completely different understanding of what's required or what they're supposed to be doing or what they can't do. And it just seemed like, actually, we've got to get everyone on the same page. So, I mean, part of that may be that there is a pause just while we get everyone on the same page.
Now, also this week, warnings over threats to productive land.
Yes, a report from the Ministry for the Environment showed more productive soil is eroding or being used for urban development, and Horticulture New Zealand says more needs to be done to protect these soils. The report suggested a reduction in productive land around Auckland and Waikato could raise fruit and vegetable prices by up to 58% over the next 20 years.
Now, Federated Farmers is celebrating news of a probe into rural banking.
That's right. The lobby group did a survey a year ago which found farmer satisfaction with their banks was at an all-time low, and the number of farmers reporting they had come under undue pressure from their bank was at an all-time high. Among the concerns, farmers paying much higher interest rates than their urban counterparts. So it's been announced there'll be a Parliamentary Select Committee investigation into rural banking, and Fed Farmers says that's a positive first step.
To the wine harvest now, Sally, and it's wrapped up early this year in Marlborough.
It has. It's been one of the earliest ever finishes for many growers. The hot, dry summer saw fewer bunches and smaller grapes, with volumes down by about 20%. Some other news from the wine industry. Cloudy Bay Winery is set to double its Pinot Noir production after buying a farm in Otago. About 18 hectares of the farm beside Lake Dunstan will be planted in the Pinot Noir variety. Cloudy Bay's technical manager, Jim White, says it's exciting times.
The altitude's about 320 metres, which is quite a little bit higher than our our Northburn vineyard, and we think that's going to be perfectly suited because it'll be a little bit later ripening. Wine style will be slightly different to what we currently get, and we think it'll really complement our current vineyard holding. But also thinking forward, as we've got a warming climate, it's going to be a little bit later ripening, so it sort of hedges our bets against climate change.
Jim White says it will be about 8 years before vines mature and grow enough quality grapes to produce a premium export Pinot Noir.
Now, Sally, you've got some news on the rural real estate market.
Yeah, it's been pretty quiet. New data from the Real Estate Institute shows in the 3 months ended February, there were 104 fewer farm sales than in the same period the year before. That's a 32% drop. However, prices are up, with the median price per hectare for all farms sold in the same period just over $28,000, an 8.5% increase compared to last year.
Now, just finally, Sally, there's been a development in the area of agricultural training.
There has. There's going to be a complete overhaul of food and fibre qualifications. This is because the number studying in the area has been declining in recent years. The review will be led by Muka Tangata, that's the People, Food and Fibre Workforce Development Council. It'll involve all agricultural qualifications outside of university, including level 2 and 3 courses done at high school.
Thanks, Sally. That's Sally Murphy with the Rural News Wrap.
You're listening to Country Life on RNZ National, 101 FM.
Let's go to the Lake Mangamahoy mountain bike trails in Taranaki now to meet some of those involved with a group called Rural Riders. You've probably heard of surfing for farmers. Well, Rural Riders follows the same model, except these farmers are on mountain bikes instead of surfboards. It's a chance to go out one evening a week to focus on the dips and the jumps rather than the weather and the milk price.
When people can, this is going to come with us. Tim.
Hi. Hi, Tim.
Shall
Hi.
We? My name's Tim Lloyd. I'm one of the regional coordinators for Rural Riders here in New Plymouth. There's 11 or 12 regional groups now. So it started off in 2019, 2020, and then basically it's grown. It was about 4 or 5 last year, and then there's about 11 or 12 this year. Basically, this is all funded by sponsorships from some awesome companies that back us up. Balance Agri-Nutrients, FILGEA, Rabobank, Torpedo 7, and the Rural Support Trust. So they all pitch in to enable this to happen across the country.
Had a good ride?
Yeah, no, it was good. Yep, no, I enjoyed it. Yeah.
So do you come out every week?
Yep. Yeah, they come out every week, every Thursday night. It's good. Meet up with the same blokes pretty much, and yeah, no, it's good. I'm a dairy farmer. I milk about 350 cows, and it's just a good night out, really. Yeah.
Have you just got into riding through this? Or?
Pretty much, yeah. I ride with the kids, with my family, and then this is sort of a night of my own to talk to a few other different people and a few other different farmers, and yeah, share the stories of what you do during the day. Yeah, no, it is good. Yeah.
Does it sort of relieve a bit of the pressure?
Yeah, I suppose it shares, as they say, the problem halved is a problem, I mean a problem, whatever it is, that saying, I can't remember the saying now. But yeah, so it is good, yeah. Yeah,
because no, your good. Job is quite physical in the shed anyway, isn't it?
Yeah,
so it's not
it
like
is.
You need the exercise.
Well, I think it does you good, actually, because dairy farming is not as physical as it used to be. You know, you sit in the tractor and you walk up and down the pit in the cow shed, but you don't break into a sweat digging post holes like you used to. I use, you know, drive the tractor and bang them in now. So I think it does me good, actually, coming out for a ride and keeping a bit of fitness. Yeah.
So it's the beers afterwards.
Yeah.
Light refreshment.
Yeah.
And you? Can I have a word with you?
Yeah, you better talk to Greg.
Greg. Yeah, I'll put you straight on what Neil said.
He's
Greg Sampson, I'm with FIL.
FIL,
we're a dairy hygiene animal health specialist, so we deal with shed chemicals, your detergents, and then teat sprays and things like that for mastitis prevention.
So have you been riding before this, or have you just got into it with Rural Riders?
I always have had a mountain bike, but never really done much of it. And now I've got an e-bike, which makes mountain biking way more fun. So, yeah, no, it's a good excuse to catch up with the farmers out in the hills, have a bit of fun.
Yep. Make a few contacts.
Well, yeah. Well, it turns out I know pretty much most of them anyway. But yeah, it's nice just having a bit of off-farm fun, giving each other a bit of stick.
You need a bit of off-farm fun.
You do.
Does it get a bit serious out there?
It can do. Yes, it definitely can do on farm. But it just lightens it up. Like Neil was saying, a problem shared is a problem halved.
That's the one.
Yeah.
What have you guys been yarning about today?
Nothing to do with farming, really. Oh, no, you were talking about the strength of nitrogen and urea.
Right, we're talking about urea.
With the balance boys, but yeah. But normally it's just, talking smack, really.
Do you pick up a few tips as well about what everyone else is doing?
Yeah, probably.
Can do it at the different times, like through calving.
What not to do.
Although we're not doing this through calving. But you talk about it in retrospect.
Because it hasn't been a great season, dairy-wise, has it? I mean, with the lack of rain?
It has been for us. We've been all right up here. Like, I think South Taranaki and Opunaki have struggled, haven't they? But I think North Taranaki, we've been pretty good this year.
Yeah, it has been good. Challenging, though. Wet ground, moist, damp, good for bacterial growth. Mastitis has been a problem. Lameness has been more of a problem. But so, yeah, different seasons, different years, different issues.
When did you get into this, rural riders?
I did one ride last year, but didn't have a bike. I used my daughter's bike and then broke it. And so I've just bought myself a cheaper bike just to get in and get out and do it.
Is it quite hard to get off farm?
It's not, but if you don't have an appointment, then you won't get off farm. So because we have to be here at 6 o'clock, you have to get your jobs done to try and get here. It is a struggle, well, for me, but
is it worth it?
Oh yeah, very much so. Yeah, once you're away, it's a bit of exercise and a beer and yeah.
So what else do you get out of it?
I learn how to ride my bike properly. you mean as in mental? I'm okay with that sort of thing. I don't know. Working by myself, seem to be okay. Yeah, this is just a form of exercise and talk to different people, I suppose, because all our friends are dairy farmers, so you always talk the same thing. So yeah, we might have been talking urea, but it was what else you can get out of the urea and the nitrogen, and so yeah.
So yeah, it's been probably a good 20-odd years since I've been on a bike. So it's the first time doing it this year.
Is it difficult for you to get off the farm?
Yeah, it can be. You just get stuck in your own little rut and just keep going. And so it's good to get out and socialise. And, brother-in-law actually made me come along. It gives you something to look forward to. Otherwise, you're just looking at the same walls 24/7. So
get out into the bush.
Get out and, just talk shit. and you just give each other heaps and it's great fun. You're getting out, you're getting physical, and so you're not thinking about anything else. Once you're in the trees and going around, you're thinking about what's happening, not what's happened on farm, not what's happening at home or nothing like that. You can, if you do, you're going to fall off and into the trees or something like that. So it's good for you to have a breakaway. And when you're on farm, you just focus on what's happening around you, and it's a daily slog. Get your normal stuff done and go home, put your feet up and go back and do it again. So as I said, someone else said, it gives us something to look forward to.
I met a guy today who has not missed a milking in 20 years.
Yep.
There'd be people out there like that.
Oh, hell yeah. I know guys that have gone 40-odd years, 50 years, not had a break.
What do you do?
Operations managers for the American Foulbrood Pest Management Plan, so biosecurity for honeybees. Yeah. So, I mean, I've beekept for 30 years and then I stepped into running the biosecurity side of things. So, yeah, but this is great because this is sort of my escape from the office once a week. But, yeah. And these guys are real good, so, yeah.
Do you miss being in the sector, being more in an office these days?
Office is good, but I get out when I can. And, I've done a bit of farming, so relate with these guys pretty quickly. And half of them have had bees on their farm as well. So, there's sort of two relationships there in terms of our rural outlook. But most of what we talk about is not the farm and not the bees.
What do you talk about?
Oh, you know, we sort of just talk about how our week's going and what we're doing at work, but more, you know, where we've been in life and what we're sort of heading to and what's it like raising a bunch of kids, or, you know, what are your kids into versus mine, and, you know, sort of, it's sort of maybe things we wouldn't talk about, you know, on a day-to-day basis on the farm or on, in my case, in the office. So, yeah, it's really good to, I don't know, I smile a lot here. Not saying I don't smile at home, but, you know, you definitely look forward to every Thursday night and going on the ride and, yeah, just sharing it with like-minded people, really. But, yeah.
Are there a few people who might have some problems that this can really help with?
Oh, yeah, I think so. Like, sometimes, you know, once the smaller group, different groups will talk about different things. And, you know, there's been a week where we talked about sort of the hardship of some of the things that people were going through and helped each other out on that. And I don't think that everyone gets that output or that comfortable space to say that, especially working on a farm. You know, you're usually on the farm all day with your worker and you maybe don't want to open up to them as much as you do some random person that you go riding with once a week. So, yeah, it's been good mentally, mental health-wise. And, I definitely do. I find it great to come out here and, you know, some of the things you talk about are great and some of the things you talk about aren't so. But everyone can relate to, everyone sort of has something to relate back to that, so you don't feel alone, which is sort of really that mental health thing. I wouldn't be riding if there wasn't a group of people to ride with. I really enjoy riding, but the social aspect is what gets me out here every Thursday.
Dwayne Hill. You also heard from Neil Ryan, Greg Sampson, Brendan Cairns, Stephen Hancock, and the new Plymouth Rural Riders Group Coordinator, Tim Lloyd. There are several rural riders groups around the country. They're winding up now for the season, but in the summer months, they head out once a week or every fortnight.
My name is Sarah Maxwell. I am a farmer from Fielding in the Manawatū, and you're listening to Country Life on RNZ National.
Farmers and scientists have been getting together around the country lately, and our next story gives you a taste of some of the research which might help New Zealand agriculture into the future. The Food, Farming and Freshwater Roadshow presents practical science research undertaken by Our Land and Water, Toi Tū Te Whenua, Toi Ora Te Wai. When it stopped in Marlborough, Cosmo Kentish Barnes popped in with his recording equipment. It was a busy day at Renwick's Event Centre as the Wine and Food Festival was also being set up nearby. Event organiser Mark Woods is a rural engagement advisor for Our Land and Water.
We're doing one of our rural roadshows that we've been doing around the countryside, where we try and get into the rural communities, get our researchers out there. One thing to actually produce really good research and really good science, but we also need to try and make sure that we get penetration into our rural communities and give our farmers and our growers and other people that are interested in the opportunity to actually hear it from the researcher's mouth, and also the opportunity to sit there and nail them and ask them questions and actually get some more information as well. So.
Yes, and a good turnout this morning?
Yeah, so we've got, looks like we'll end up with a crowd of around about 70-odd here, which by all accounts the locals that I've been working with to put this together said, look, a good crowd has been normally 30, 35, so they're absolutely stoked. And we've been getting that a fair bit around the countryside as well. So interestingly enough, I've had a lot of people say, oh, the rural community aren't interested in this research. Well, this is actually sort of proof that we are interested. We do want to know more stuff. We are trying to do our part and give us the opportunity to actually learn this sort of stuff and don't be the gatekeeper.
So are you taking this roadshow all around the country?
Yeah, we've been in Balclutha, Alexandra, we're off to Tokararoa in a couple of weeks, Tauramanui, Taihape. I was really scared to go into the Hawke's Bay because I thought these guys have actually had a really rough run. It was probably one of the best road shows I've been involved with, 120-odd people in the room. We've been into the Wairarapa. Yeah, so we've got a lot more road shows to come in that as well. So it's been quite humbling to actually see the uptake of information and the interest that there's actually been out there to actually be involved in these. And I think what's really important in our rural communities too is a good social event too.
Yes. Have you been communicating with people in this region to find out what sort of research they wanted to find out about?
Yeah, so the one thing that I've learned in my time, I'm an ex-stock agent, but I don't know a local community like the people that actually live and breathe it. So the best way to actually play that game is to go and talk to the people in that local community and say, what's interesting for you? What do you want to know about? What's going to actually help you out there on the farms or in your businesses? So we need to be putting stuff stuff together that's actually suitable for the area that we're in.
Mm. And who's up first this morning?
So Tiffany Tompkins is up today, so she's always been a crowd favourite. She's got a tough gig because agriculture in New Zealand hasn't necessarily always looked at somebody from organics with a lot of favour, and she's done a very interesting piece on EU farm to fork strategy, so how's that going to affect New Zealand going forward and what opportunities that we may have there as well.
Fascinating. And what sort of people are here today? Are they mostly farmers and viticulturalists?
So we've got a really good split today. Generally, a lot of these events have been probably 75% farmers, but we've probably got a mixture today of probably 50% what I'd call rural professionals, and then we've got 50% of the crowd as farmers and horticulturists as well, viticulturalists. So, yeah, a nice spread.
Just before the roadshow kicks off, I have a quick chat with fourth-generation Marlborough farmer Warwick Lisserman.
I've got a sheep and beef farm in the Awatere Valley, and I guess why I'm here is to just look and listen and learn. We've got so many things that we can do, and it's about putting things in the right order to make the most impact. So I guess it's making sure you're well informed, and that's where this sort of science that's been done is invaluable to us.
What are the biggest challenges you are facing at the moment on your farm?
Well, I guess the biggest challenge is obviously the financial pressures and the current dry. So one of the biggest challenges with the freshwater work is low flow, low volume waterways. In the low flow situations, it is a lot more challenging to make significant improvements to water quality. You can do a lot of stuff, but to actually make significant change or significant differences to water quality is a big challenge.
Mm. Well, it sounds like the first talk is about to get underway, and so I guess we better take our seats. Thank you, Warwick.
Thank you.
Improving water quality while maintaining primary production is the focus of a project driven by Lee Matheson from Perrin Ag. He's presenting his findings at today's roadshow.
What we're trying to do is look at three catchments across New Zealand which have recognised water quality issues, and then understand what is the capacity of those catchments to change what they do on the land, both in terms of practices and land use, in order to meet those water quality aspirations that the communities have, and then to understand what's going to be required for that to happen. So, you know, can the farmers we have on those lands today make the transition required to meet water quality targets moving forward? So we're working with the Tukituki catchment in Hawke's Bay, the Te Hoiere catchment here in Marlborough, and the Waiho Wainono catchment in South Canterbury.
On a sort of ground level, how have you worked with those farmers?
So in terms of the work so far, my team, and you know, I've got to note, it's not just me doing this work, I've got some awesome people on our team at Perrin Ag doing this.
Yep.
You know, they spend a lot of time in the spring on the phone talking to farmers in these catchments. We then corralled, bribed, cajoled farmers into completing online surveys for us. And we've then gone and analysed all that information. And then we're in the process of feeding that back to those farmers and those catchment groups. And then once our big catchment models have been run, we're then going to be on the ground working with farmers in those catchments to understand what those outputs mean for their business in particular, and then working with them to identify, is there a viable pathway for their business to transition? So that's going to be, you know, sitting around some kitchen tables, pulling out some calculators, having some pretty challenging discussions around what people are doing in their businesses and what they might have to think about changing.
Mm. Have you noticed there's been a bit of resistance to change?
No, look, I don't think there's so much resistance to change. I think there's resistance to the rate of change. And that's probably compounded when, you know, most farmers that I know are trying to do things better and in a way that will allow their businesses to be here and water quality to improve. I just think that we're asking a huge amount of our farmers, and that, you know, we maybe forget sometimes that our whole community has benefited from the decisions that have been made on the land for the last 180 years. There have been some downsides there too, but trying to turn that around now, it's a big job.
Mm.
You know, we've got some pretty aggressive and challenging targets for the water quality that we all want to have. And I think, you know, a piece of work like this is going to help inform all members of the community around the implications that might have to transpire in order for us to achieve those.
As you can probably hear in the background, there's a jackhammer going intermittently because they are setting up the tents for the wine and food festival here. But Lee, it sounds like this project is ongoing. There's still quite a bit of work to do on it.
We're about 60% the way through the work there. The main modelling analysis has almost been completed, and we'll be out on farm to complete the business case validation work, and then we'll be writing this up, and it will be wrapped up in the middle of May.
Hamish Morrison, Rye Valley, dairy farmer.
Why have you come here today to this event?
Yeah, there's sort of a good range of speakers, and just wanted to hear what they got to say. And the main reason I came was the Pure and Ag stuff, which we'd already done a survey as part of that. So I was just wanting to hear anything they had to say about that.
Oh, that was with Lee.
With Lee.
So are you part of a catchment that has been working with them?
Yeah, we're in the Te Hori catchment, so yeah, part of that project.
What sort of work were you doing within the project?
The project itself, we've just been involved with riparian planting, and I guess the main thing would be the dung beetles. That's quite a new thing. Yeah. But yeah.
And that takes a while, doesn't it, before you can actually gauge whether they're doing well?
Yeah, I think it's minimum 5 to 10 years to see the benefit of it. Yeah. So it's definitely a slow burn, but that's the same with any of these mitigation tools, I guess.
Yes. How are things going on the farm at the moment?
We're having a pretty good season. We're definitely the green belt of Marlborough. We've had regular rains this summer. Production's been pretty good.
We are in beautiful Renwick here at the Arland and Water Roadshow, looking at the different research that they have funded over the years. And I was lucky enough with some colleagues to receive some funding to do some work on a paper in the European Union.
This is Tiffany Tompkins. She's the Nelson-based CEO of Organics Aotearoa New Zealand. I asked Tiffany what her research project is focused on.
It's looking at how the EU Green Deal will affect New Zealand's land-based primary sectors. So what are the rules and legislation across the Green Deal that are going to affect our exports to the EU?
What is the Green Deal?
So the Green Deal is a framework that basically puts a plan in place across all facets of the economy to be climate neutral by 2050. And there are many, many strategies and plans that touch on agriculture. So the biodiversity strategy, the zero pollution strategy, the farm to fork strategy, the bioeconomy strategy. There's so many different strategies that touch on agriculture. But what's important is all those strategies reinforce the goals that have been set by the EU Green Deal. Mm. The reality will be something that's different from probably the initial strategy, but the EU Green Deal is really a mechanism to transition and protect the domestic farm industry in Europe and level up for climate change without those companies or those farms and those brands going out of business because people with lower environmental standards and cheaper production costs are going to be able to flood that market.
Yes. Are you expecting that Green Deal to have quite a big impact on food producers here?
Absolutely. So in terms of the primary producers, we found 5 key areas that are going to affect all New Zealand producers. The first is a ban on pesticides that are already banned in the EU. So products containing any residue of pesticides that are already banned will not be able to import them into the EU.
So are there a lot more pesticide bans in the EU bloc now compared to New Zealand?
Yes. So I think there's approximately 195 banned pesticides in the EU, and there is currently 27 of those that are banned in New Zealand.
Gosh, so some food producers might be affected by this.
Absolutely.
By this change.
Yes, yep. Yeah. And so what we need to do is keep an eye on what are those banned pesticides and take stock of what we're actually using in New Zealand. Some of those pesticides may never have ever been imported here, but because they're not banned, there might be some additional cost to comply with those rules because you're going to have to prove that you don't have those residues. So how will we do that? So it'll be interesting to hear how the government will respond.
How important is the EU bloc for farmers and growers here?
Oh yeah, we just had completed the New Zealand EU Free Trade Agreement, which is really important. That'll add $1.8 billion, I think, a year on top of what we're already exporting. So the potential for growth in exports is phenomenal.
My name's Jim White. I'm the Technical and Sustainable Development Director from Cloudy Bay Vineyards here in Marlborough.
Jim was all ears when Tiffany was doing her presentation.
I just think it's really interesting to sort of see and get an update on what's happening with the EU and the legislation and how that's going to impact us, and then get a sense of, you know, some of this research that's taken place that may or may not be applicable to our business and certainly the wine industry as a whole.
Do you have concerns about the EU Green Deal?
At Cloudy Bay, we're owned by a French multinational company, which means that I've had a bit of insight into this, and we see a lot of these things coming down the pipeline, maybe a little bit earlier than a lot of farmers do in New Zealand. And we're seeing the impacts of how that's driving our broader company policy already. And I guess what we're trying to think about locally is how we can contextualise those requirements and then apply them in the context of growing grapes here in Marlborough.
Mm. What changes are you making in your vineyards now to prepare for any policy changes overseas?
We're having to focus a lot on the reduction and elimination of the use of herbicides in particular, which has significant challenges here. We're doing that in novel ways, such as, you know, inventing our own autonomous robots that can do weeding in the vineyards. And I guess formalisation of regenerative agricultural practices in our vineyards is something. In Europe, they call it agroecology. We call it sort of regen viticulture or regen agriculture. So formalising those, working out what to measure. And we're not tackling this as an individual company alone. We've got industry bodies that are working on this. And I think together as an industry, we will achieve these things, because we're an export-focused industry and we need to adapt.
And I guess in Europe, some countries offer subsidies to farmers, of course, but also to vineyards, which helps them to adapt to changes a bit quicker.
Yeah, it's certainly one interesting thing is, you know, European farmers are subsidised to some degree to adapt to these changes, which essentially provides an artificial trade barrier against the importation of New Zealand products and from around the world. So, yeah, we don't live in a world of subsidies here in New Zealand, and nor are we like to anytime soon. So we have to really take these things on our own and work with them in the best way that we can do so possibly.
How important is the European market for Cloudy Bay?
Oh, it accounts for about 20% of our exports, and we export about 97% of our produce, so we're a very export-focused company. European as a traditional market, it's a growing market for us, and it tends to lead the requirements for regulations and information, so it sort of is a bit of a canary in the coal mine for the rest of our export markets throughout the world.
Mel McColgan is a program coordinator at Tasman Bay Guardians, a non-profit organisation that was set up to protect and restore the Tasman Bay and its surrounding environment.
I'm over from Atawhai Nelson today to hear from the speakers about the planning for farmers to mitigate their impacts on freshwater and to look for opportunities to collaborate with others working in the same field.
What sort of projects are you involved in?
A lot of what we do is education with community and schools. So a lot of it is freshwater, but because of that natural connection between freshwater and marine environments, we also run snorkel events. When it's in the marine reserve, it's comparing a marine reserve to a non-marine reserve and what the kids find there. Same sort of thing with our streams. We might go to an urban stream which is highly impacted by stormwater pollution, but then go to a very natural stream and that's forested and a little bit like our streams once would have been a couple of hundred years ago. And you know, sometimes we talk about the feeling in your puku and your experience of a place. So if we go somewhere where there's rubbish and stuff all around, you don't go away with that same nice feeling as when you've been in really clean, clear water that actually feels like you're, you know, being revitalized. So yeah, just good to see everybody understanding their own impact.
So do you work mostly with younger people?
Yeah, but we also, I guess, got a strong Maturanga Māori perspective around linking science and environment in traditional ways too. So we want to hear from our kaumātua, our elders, who have memories of how our environment was perhaps long before our rangatahi got here, and then also tapping into this new wave of highly sophisticated, intelligent young beings that are going to lead us and making us feel better about our environment.
And do you have strong iwi affiliations?
Yeah, so I don't affiliate to the 8 iwi of Te Tauihu, but I've been based in the area for 30 years. I've got pretty close relationships there. Could have had something to do with being a mutton birder from the deep south, because I got to know a lot of the local iwi by selling them mutton birds. So Ngāi Tahu and Ngāti Māmui are my iwi affiliations.
Yes, and how important is it to come to these roadshows?
Yeah, I think it keeps you in the loop, because as we know, you know, working with councils and DOC and different organisations, we're not always resourced to talk to one another or communicate as well as we could. And so these are those opportunities to really see what's happening on the peripheral and things that we might otherwise not know about that are actually really relevant to what we're educating people about.
Hi Cosmo, I'm Heather Collins and I'm here presenting today about our project in Waikato and Bay of Plenty.
Tell me about that project.
So this is all about starting with the soil. It's about building a connection with the soil and thinking that when farmers have healthy soil, they produce healthy pasture, which produces healthy stock and healthy food, which means our people are healthy.
How are you conducting the study?
Okay, so we've got 10 case study farms and we're presenting about one of them today. So my role as a social scientist, I'm out there talking with the farmers, hearing their stories. And we've got a land management team and we're helping the farmers think about what do they want to do and helping them do that.
Yes. So tell me about some of your findings.
Okay. So I guess for the farmer that we are talking about today, we're presenting his journey today. His question was, why are we putting on so much nitrogen? And how do you change away from what you know? But he didn't know how. He didn't know how to do that. So through this program, we're helping him transition away from lots of nitrogen and synthetic fertilisers, and he has put in more diverse crops, more diverse pastures. And through all of these changes he's made, there's things like he's less time on the tractor, more time to spend with his family, he's got his young daughter, he has time for lunch, he notices the cows are healthier, he's less stressed. So by starting with the soil, it's feeding right through the chain and through to how he's feeling.
So it sounds like he's a happier man.
Oh, he is so much happier. And the big thing for him is realising that he can make these changes with the support and where it could go. And it's like he said to me, he feels like he's gone through a door. And through the door, and behind him was conventional farming, and through the door, there's this room and there are no walls.
Since that farmer that you've been working with has made the changes, has he found that expenses have gone up and production has gone down? I mean, what are some of the real consequences of making these changes?
I think he said the thing that surprised him the most, he was, because he's first time on the farm. He's just taken over the farm. He was really worried, was he going to lose money? But what he's found is by the changes he's made, he's still doing the same number of kilograms of milk solids. He's able to pay the bills, his costs have come down, they've come down and fertiliser gone up a bit in seeding, but he knows things are going to
ebb and flow,
as they always do. Yep. But I think he said, you know, the big thing for him was he was worried that he wouldn't be able to pay the bills, he'd wreck the farm, you know, all those sorts of things. What were other farmers going to think of him? But now, farmers are looking over the fence, cars coming to his place. Oh, what are you doing? Oh, what are you trying? And we've noticed that on all of the 10 case study farms we have in our project.
Presenting with Heather is the project's engagement lead and North Island farmer, Nick Collins.
I'm from the Northern King Country, a little place called Piu Piu, and I was fortunate enough to have the opportunity to be involved with this wonderful Our Land and Water project, Reti Kuta, Reti Katai. So one of the aspects of this project is the interwoven threads of knowledge and how we can all work together to achieve a better outcome. So it's the social element, environmental, cultural and financial aspects of farm business.
Yes, and it sounds like you and Heather are pretty happy with the way this project is going.
Oh, there's been some exceptionally good outcomes. And I think the key is just that support for the farmers. You know, it's really important. And people often say, well, why isn't there more adoption around alternative farming systems, you know, call it regen or restorative or integrating science with nature? And I think it's just that on-farm support that's probably lacking. So, you know, we're just so grateful to have this opportunity to share with these 10 farms. And they become our messengers. You know, it's that mycelial network spreading out into their communities. And so that's the key objective of this project.
Mm. Is this project going to continue?
Well, we hope so. Yeah, we're not absolutely sure as yet. Having been a change in government, you know, that's thrown a bit of uncertainty into the situation and may just mean that we just have to wait on a decision. But there certainly needs to be some continuum because we've got some really good momentum. And any farm system, as you know, you could imagine, is going to take a lot longer than 2 years to see any significant change. So we're hopeful.
That was Nick Collins, a speaker at the Food, Farming and Freshwater Roadshow held recently in Marlborough. The next stop for the roadshow is Maramarua on May the 1st and then Te Puke on May the 8th.
Well, that's all we've got for you this week. Now, don't forget to send us your feedback to country@rnz.co.nz. We do love to hear from you, and you can subscribe to our podcast there too. Have a great weekend. Bye now.
Ka kite anō.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.